56. Mike stumbled in the sand. It was 2 feet higher on this side. The wind was burying the rings. He marched forward. He didn't run. He didn't have the time or strength to fall and pick himself up again and again. When he had something to run to, then he'd run. The hose stretched out behind him. It was 8 feet 4 inches from where Sasha stood to the threshold of the rings. He had just shy of 34 feet on the wasteland side, depending on if there was any stretch in the hose. Pattern recognition kicked in 14 feet from the rings. His eyes passed over a series of ridges and folds in the sand. The ants conjured up models and extrapolations based on wind direction and accumulation. There was a body buried there just a few inches down. It had 3 arms. He considered the possibility that it was the rifle Jamie had grabbed, but all 3 limbs were crooked and the body was too long. He moved through the sand. The wind was dying down, but visibility still sucked. The wasteland had been drained of all color, all life. 34 feet of hose ran out very fast. He looked back at the rings and then out at the desert. The sandstorm was rolling off toward the horizon, but it was still dense enough to hide the canyon. Something moved in the sandstorm. A shadow up in the air. He tried to reconstruct the glimpse he'd seen, but the ants kept shredding the images. Nothing could have wings that big.
Jamie!
He counted to 3 and yelled again. The wasteland swallowed it up without a single echo. A pair of black ants held up the mental timer. 3 minutes, 13 seconds. He let the ragged end of the hose drop and kept walking. When he last saw Jamie, she'd headed off to the left, so he headed that way too. The ants kept track of steps and angles and direction. The few landmarks were mapped and cataloged. The sun was in the wrong place. It was too high in the sky for late afternoon and too far south. He didn't trust it for figuring directions. He trudged through the sand. Jamie had been wearing a white shirt and faded jeans. Not an ideal combination to pick out of the wasteland, but he was pretty sure the same mental skills that let him pick out camouflage would let him spot her. In the distance, the sandstorm swirled into a series of dust devils the size of tornadoes. The ants focused on certain lines and shadows near the twists of wind and sand. He felt a twist, thinking he'd found her, and she was too far to make it back to the rings in time. Then he realized there were too many figures. 11 seraphs stood off in the distance, all but hidden in the wasteland by their cloaks. Some stood, others seemed to be kneeling. Their arms were held up to the sky toward the sandstorm that had just blown over them. They were all facing away from him. The winds died a little more, and he realized there were another dozen of the creatures past the first line he'd seen. The ants replayed moments of the seraphs running across the sand as they charged the door.
"Jamie!"
he shouted again. He looked behind him and saw nothing. He started forward again. A full minute passed. 117 feet away from the end of the hose. 151 feet from the threshold of the rings. He set his simple map of the wasteland against his memories of the area around the door campus. He'd been heading north-northeast. He stood where an old east-west access road, not much more than a path, ran in his world. Mike veered more to the north. Jamie hadn't passed back into his line of sight, so she had to have gone farther that way. He made his way over a dune and called out her name twice. He marched for another 30 seconds. 1 minute, 48 seconds left on the clock. Barely enough time to get back to the door.
"Jamie!"
he yelled again.
"Mike!"
He spun around. She lumbered over a dune through the loose sand with another woman. Someone tall with a bright red shirt and dark hair that had a white stripe. The ants spent a few seconds figuring out hypothetical paths, ways Sasha could have gotten into the desert and out to Jamie without his hearing or seeing her. Then she looked up and he saw the lack of stitches on her arm and her unmarked neck. Blood covered the white of her right eye. 2 identical chocolate croissants. Quantum donuts. He brushed the ants aside and took long strides across the wasteland to join them. They were coming from farther behind the door as if they'd traveled in a wide circle.
"What are you doing here?"
called Jamie.
"Looking for you. The bomb didn't go off? We've got about 1.5 minutes. Did you reset it? What?" "We can't find the door,"
the other Sasha said. The ants pulled up their map and rendered it in 3 dimensions. He glanced over his shoulder. The rings were 63 yards away in the sand-covered remains of Site B. The off-white housings blended with the wasteland, and the shimmer in the air wasn't visible from this direction. He wouldn't have found it again if he didn't know just where to look.
"This way," he said.
They turned around and the ants in Mike's head went mad. The thing in the sky was turning, soaring out from behind the sandstorm in its wake. It was like watching a jumbo jet bank in the air, something that had to go miles out of its way just to turn around. Its wings thrust down again, and the far side of the canyon was swept clear. He took in the size and the tentacles and the wings and the sheer impossibility of it. The ants scurried and flailed and came up with nothing to compare it to, nothing that could explain it. More and more ants appeared and he forced them away. The ones that mattered were holding the timer. 1:13. He'd wasted 7 seconds staring at the thing in the sky as it swung itself around. The seraphs on the ground seemed to shout and cheer at the thing, even as the wind of its passing hurled them into the air or slammed them to the ground. "The dust before the endless sandstorm," the patchwork man had said. "They are the tide going out before a wave comes in." He traced the curve of the alpha predator's path. It led back to the door. Straight to it.
"I think we should go," said Sasha.
He pointed the way again and they ran for the door. It was time to run. They stumbled and dragged one another across the sand. Mike took a step and the shimmer appeared in the air as if he'd walked around a corner and found it. Outside, without walls and a ceiling blocking the view, it was clear how big the rift had grown. The heat haze stretched almost 50 feet into the air and 100 feet across, big enough for the thing in the sky to force its way through. They found the hose already slipping beneath the sand. Mike tripped over the buried cinder blocks and his side flared, hot and wet. They dragged him back to his feet and headed for the rings. 28 seconds. They slogged the few yards past the dead bug man to the fold in space. The air coming through it felt chilly.
"Move fast," said Mike. "There's only one charge, but I think it's still enough to kill us if we're too close. Just run as far as you can."
They stepped through the door. The steel pathway clanged under their feet. A wave of cold hit them. They danced around the body of the bug man and staggered down the ramp. Sasha, the Sasha at the bottom of the ramp with the bloody neck and bandaged arm, swung her rifle around. The Sasha with the bloodshot eye held up her hands.
"Whoa! Fuck me,"
Sasha said over her rifle.
"No time," yelled Mike. "Go!" "What? But you were barely gone a minute."
Mike stopped short and almost fell. Jamie caught his arm.
"What?" "A minute tops," said the Sasha with the rifle and bandages.
The ants spilled out. The relative distance, the bushes and the seraphs moving back and forth across the wasteland. He glanced up at the charge and looked at Jamie.
"How long were you over there?"
Jamie shrugged.
10 minutes, maybe."
Bloodshot Sasha nodded.
"Sounds about right."
"Okay, then," he said. "Just over 2 minutes to save the world."
"Oh, fuck me,"
said bandaged Sasha.
"It's gone."
They all looked up. The plastic carapace that Dylan had chopped away with a hatchet had reappeared. It was smooth and pristine. The C4 charge had vanished.
"I think it's inside the carapace,"
Bloodshot Sasha said. Mike closed his eyes. The side of his shirt was wet. The air was stale with nitrogen. The ants were seething, red and black, carrying facts and snippets and ideas. What was setting off the bleed through? Was it the items themselves? Certain actions or temperatures or... Or what did Kotarovich say would help break down the barriers?
"It's us," he said to Jamie.
"The more of us here, closer to it, the more possible outcomes, the more potential. The more potential, the more bleed through. We're making reality flip channels."
"What?"
"It's how we made the extra bolts appear and how we brought one of the charges back when we all got too close. It's why more tool chests appeared when the Marines got here and why everything calmed down when they were killed." He stepped up onto the ramp.
"Come on, get closer to it."
Bandaged Sasha raised her eyebrows.
"Closer?"
Jamie looked past him. The Alpha Predator had finished its huge turn and was heading back to them. It was over the canyon, maybe 2 miles away, but time went faster over there. She stepped up onto the ramp. So did the Sashas. Mike watched for a ripple or a change. He blinked, then blinked again. When he opened his eyes the second time, Dylan's rifle and the remote were back on the pathway.
"What are we doing?"
asked Bloodshot Sasha. She looked out across the wasteland. The Alpha Predator swelled in the sky.
"We're looking for quantum donuts," said Mike.
The rings flickered. The carapace vanished again. 1:20. There'd been three of them by the rings when the first charge came back, and there were four now. The rate of change should be faster, unless the Sashas counted as one mind, or there'd been four people near the rings when the charge came back. He looked across the room, then at the bandaged Sasha. "Did you kill him? Frankenstein?" She shook her head.
"I've just been stand—"
"Drag him over here. We need more minds, more potential." The Sashas ran across the room. They dragged the patchwork man across the floor. The slender figure left trails of dark blood on the floor. Mike could see three good-sized lumps and bruises forming on its head from the rifle stocks.
"He used to be human," Mike explained.
"I bet his brain still is, enough to factor into Kotorovich's equations, at least. The more minds, the stronger the rift, the more bleed-through." They hauled the twisted body up onto the ramp. A few stitches broke open as they dragged it across the expanded steel. The fingers on one hand twitched and the lid over the human eye fluttered.
"I think it's waking up," said bloodshot Sasha.
53 seconds. Mike turned his head and fishhooks of pain pulled at his ribs. The Alpha Predator filled the sky in the wasteland. It was less than a mile away. Its tentacles splayed open like a green flower. Mike glimpsed huge, amber eyes, each one 20 feet across. Then the rings rippled in his peripheral vision.
"Get back!" he yelled at them. "Get back fast!"
They leaped over the patchwork man and off the ramp. Mike's side and stomach were on fire, and they flared up as the shock of landing shook his body. Jamie grabbed him and tugged him away. The first ring had turned silver and lumpy.
"What?"
said Jamie. It was tape. Duct tape. The entire ring was wrapped in it. The loops covered the whole thing, wrapped back and forth across almost every inch of surface. The tape held down C4 charges, dozens of them. They were doubled and tripled and quadrupled up at every point on the ring. All of them had jury-rigged detonators. On at least 4/5 of them, the detonator had a faint red glow.
10 pounds would take out that whole wall if you placed it right.
Mike made a conservative estimate that the front ring had 850 pounds of C4 attached to it.